Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Yes, indeed, everyone. Let's get started here. Tonight, we have a very interesting guest with us, Micah Rand, known as the Silver Moon Medicine, has a practice in multidimensional healing. Her life threads are woven between symbiotic psychic vampirism and a neo-cosmic metaphysician. She has been working with souls since the late 80s and prefers to assist those that wish to ascend from their own private hell and define purpose in the path and vessel they are in this lifetime. She is also a tarot reader and a hands-on healer. She has assisted many with their spiritual awakening and roadblocks in life. We have an interesting show for you tonight, so please sit back and welcome to the show, my guest, Micah Rand.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Well, hello, Micah, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, really interesting topic we're going to talk about tonight. A little bit different than usual, and I think you're going to find Micah to be very, very interesting and engaging and also educational along the way here. So, Micah, before we get started with going into the main portion of what we're going to discuss tonight, I would like you to just kind of reflect a little bit for me here and go back as far as you can and try to recall at what point in your life, what age, what was happening, where you felt that something either about you or an experience you had just seemed a little bit atypical than what other people were experiencing.
Sounds good. I think really for me, it probably started happening where I was conscious about it was more around, I'd say 13 or 14. I just got really interested in astrology, and we're talking in the, you know, early 70s, finding stuff, something not very easy. And I had astrology books and was learning all about that kind of stuff. And of course, life takes you on your road that you go on. And, you know, I just put it off on the back burner, but kind of always had it underneath. And then I had some experiences that were like, wow, why did that happen to me? And so then really of my awakening started happening probably around the late or mid 90s is when where crystals, I started engaging in crystals and using crystals, and I really found power during that time, and that's what really kind of took off to be the person who you see here now.
All right, that's interesting. So let's go back a little bit to that age 13, 14, and let's get an example that you can think of about what happened that you thought, that's kind of different. And then, of course, move that into when you felt you started to all of a sudden have what we would call the awakening.
So the biggest thing that happened was, is we were at a laundromat, and I loved to lean up against the dryer. It was my favorite thing. And a gentleman opened up the dryer door next to me, and all of a sudden I was overcome with this feeling of sickness and like belly pain. And I mean, I was very young and naive. I just said, "I'm sorry, you're not feeling very good. I hope you get better." And he slammed the door and looked at me like, talking about. And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry. I was just." And by that time, my dad came over and he was on. He sees me engaging with a man in the laundromat. He's like, "I want to know how she knows that I'm sick." And I was like, I didn't know you was sick with cancer. I just felt like he wasn't feeling good. So of course my dad hush me back to the head, go on. She's just a little crazy. So I always seem to be, the odd duck. And so me off. And so that's really the experience that kind of is my root experience that I still can, feel and understand at this time in life,
Interesting. So when you're in school, because we are surrounded by, I'm talking like elementary or high school or anything like that, we're surrounded by just a tremendous amount of different energies from our peers. And not only that, we're going through puberty and all these types of things that are hormones and all that. And so things are constantly being activated around us. Did you ever find when you were in school, and we could talk about high school if you want, that you had noticed some of your abilities being a little bit like right on point, but didn't necessarily share that with anyone, or did you share that with anyone?
Well, that kind of spurs my mind that I didn't mention was that my mom passed away when I was 7.
Okay.
And that really, where, I had dreams for a long period of time of, the heavenly gates coming down, wanting to join me. But I really kind of pushed a lot of that away. That's where, my dad crazy, it's going to be okay kind of thing. But in high school, we were always the new people. Much always knew, and I knew that I had this keen ability to be able to attract people. Mm-hmm. And I always attract people that I felt were like the underdogs of the world, people who not anybody liked hanging out with, and I people most, and I fit right in with them. And of course, when you're the new girl in town all the time, kids are tough on people. But I always knew I could attract people, and the people that I attracted, I helped feel better about themselves on some strange level. I didn't really know what it was. I just knew that that was something that was about me.
Yeah. And that's interesting that you bring that up, because, everyone has their own perceptions and recollections of what it was like for them going through these, junior high school experiences. And a lot of people always seem to want to report that they didn't have an easy time. And even if they're in the cliquish group, we can even add that, because I just talked about that a little bit on another show. Even if they felt like they were in a group that was, everyone was always thinking, oh, that's the clique group, you will find that even a lot of them reported that they felt like they were the odd person out, or didn't feel like they belonged, or whatever, or something unusual about that experience that didn't necessarily bind them together either. So your mom passed away and you saw this, you're having dreams. Did you have dreams of your mother in your dreams?
Hear her voice. It was like she was up in the clouds, and then the clouds were extending a ladder down to me. And all I really had during those times was just that I felt like she was beckoning me to want to come up to visit. And of course, I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to go to heaven. I wanted to stay. I was the oldest of all my brothers and sisters, and we were all very young when she passed suddenly. And so I was wanting to stay and take care of them. So,
interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. I've heard of arms being extended before. I've never heard of the ladder being extended, but that's very interesting. All right. So now that probably added a bit of trauma, obviously, to your life, because she passed suddenly, and then all of a sudden you're kind of, I don't know if you were the oldest and you felt like you needed to take care of everybody else all of a sudden or what. So did you feel like you went through an amount of trauma to some degree because of that? And do you feel like that experience opened you up more?
Oh, I'm positive we went through a lot of trauma. I mean, unfortunately, not to speak ill of my, didn't choose the best route to take care of ourselves after traumatic things happened. And so, you know, we got a lot, we moved, we had different step parents and stuff like that. And so, I mean, there was lots of trauma. And so I do feel like that might have helped increase my keen abilities to be hypersensitive to things that were going on because there was so much trauma going on. And, you know, you to understand patterns that were happening in your family system. You learn to know who in the family needed to be protected physically. You learned how to be a really good codependent person to be able to handle kind of being done, even though it wasn't intentional, it was still traumatic, right? So, right. So yeah, absolutely. That, I guess, for me, surely a forefront of it. But I think I was born with it, to be honest, long before. I think the trauma helped me conscious mind of it to be human. But I believe I was already sent here long before that for this purpose. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can relate to that, actually. I begin to question a lot just on my own behalf. I do talk about trauma, and both Mike and I, we do speaking, and I do talk about that on occasion, that I think that that's what opened me up. But other people have a sense of believing that it's possible that I've already had that wired within me, like you may have had wired within you. And that all of a sudden we're just recognizing it more, that kind of thing. So let's talk a little bit about, one of the interesting things that I noticed at the conference that we were just at, and Micah was a speaker there, was that she brought up some really interesting topics that she talked about. And one of them in particular was, I don't use the word chasing after death or understanding death or why a paranormal person, investigator might want to, why we're so intrigued by our discoveries of what could yet be out there. Bring us down, maybe help us understand, at least from what you picked up and gathered about that. What are some of your thoughts about this connection of the paranormal investigator or the person who wants to understand death more? Where do you want to start there?
I think my focus is that many of us, have lost someone in their life, and we want to establish a connection with them. We still have heartstrings attached to them, and memories, sometimes horrible memories that we want to put a closure to. And so I feel like references and the people that I've met when we've been out investigating is that I find that connection of just wanting to understand what's on the other side of the veil. How does this connection connect to me as a human, and why am I experiencing when maybe my best friend sitting next to me is not experiencing them? And so I feel like a lot of people that who have trauma or even trauma or wounding or soul loss type things will be drawn to these conferences and experiences because they have to make the connection to the conscious mind and the spiritual mind at the same time. They also need to fill that spot within their heart that can, you know, soothe them and help them either move forward or face what they've lost. And so that's kind of what it really means. I meet a lot of people who come and say, you know, I lost somebody and I've been grieving for this long of a period of time. I don't know. I just need to contact them. I just need to get in touch with them. And another caveat to it all for me is that ghost hunting is a socially acceptable way of dealing with loss outside of religious texts. And so if you're a non-religious person, how are you being able to form that connection with people? It'd be safe, it'd be okay, without using a psychic medium or some other technique to be able to bridge that. And so I feel that, you know, that's why we get a lot of people, or even ghost hunters themselves, that get involved in it, scary to the actual ghost hunting. You know what I mean? Where they had their own trauma and experience, and so that's led them to that path.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because, of course, for me, this began, I was experiencing, energies at a very young age and was trying to just understand my ability to communicate with, some of these energies. And some of these energies I experienced were very hostile and in my own grandparents' homes, which you thought were full of love, right? And so I began for myself early trying to not necessarily understand the grief that went with it, but understand how I was able to pick up on it and hear things and be overly sensitive to it, which I should ask you this question. Do you find, and I'm not sure if I know this of you, how would you categorize yourself? Are you clairaudient, clairsentient, empath, psychic, medium? How would you categorize you?
It's really hard to categorize myself because I just really feel energies. And then I can taste energy when it comes around. I have a keen taste energy. A little bit about me, I feel like I am what I call a symbiote. And I feel that a lot of my skills and abilities come from that side of myself. And that's a whole nother topic we would talk about outside of this topic. But I do feel the energies I feel, the ability to be able to move energy and take energy, it all has to do with, did I really answer the question?
Yeah, no, you have. And I just want to tell everybody right now that we both apologize, but we have a rainy day here in Minnesota and our connection is very choppy. And so if there's something that Micah says that I need to have her repeat, just understand that it's because you're going to be seeing the same thing on this end, is that some of it never got out there the way it should. One, you called yourself something earlier. What was that again? What was that title?
Psychic vampire.
Okay, a psychic vampire. Okay.
And the symbiotic part of it is very important, though.
Yeah, that's what I want, a symbiotic psychic vampire. And once again, let's explain to people, because you're a little choppy, but explain to people, what exactly does that mean?
Most people are very scared of psychic vampires because they think that you're all their life force energy. And yes, there are some that do that. I believe I don't actually drain the life force from the person. What I focus on taking is the aura that is around you, that is your emotional body. And I will essentially feed off that emotional body is where I get my energy. How I see symbiotic psychic vampirism, which is on my blog, and you could get a little deeper with it, mm-hmm. is that negative energy and all your woes and problems that you share with me, and then I assimilate them into myself. And then during that time, I get a feeling of accomplishment and that I feel full. And what I do is I feel like I recycle. Spent any time with me, I'm very, very positive and I'm very person-centered. And so what I do is I believe that when I'm healing energy back, that's what I'm passing back out to you. Not someone else's energy, but the energy from myself that I put forth. That's the symbiotic part of the vampirism, the psychic vampirism.
Interesting. So do you have, and I don't know all the different services that you offer, but one of the slides that you had presented at the conference that I found very interesting was the slide about grief. And I don't know if you can recall, you had several bullet points regarding that, because many people experience grief differently, and they may not even know that they're experiencing grief based on things that are happening to them. But you brought up one real interesting point, and I'm just grabbing at the paper here for a second here and everything. But while I'm looking for it, would you explain to people what you know about the association with grief, especially in the world of us being fascinated, of course, by death and all that, or seeking truth or whatever. I'll have you take it from there for a moment.
Okay. And so for me, grief, kind of what I feel brings a lot of people to the ghost hunting conferences to seek out that psychic medium that can help connect that you lost, that you desire a connection with. Mm-hmm. I think what I like people to understand is that grief does ebb and timeline to it, but to know if you're still grieving a long time, let's say years after your best friend or your partner has passed away, this has become something else outside of grief, or like a piece of soul loss, where you have given a piece of yourself to that person and they have taken it aside, and it's left your spiritual self feeling empty in a space where the human can't move forward because of that. The other big part to that is, for me, is about is ghost hunters that might come, or people that have lost someone in the grieving, is coming to these conferences unfinished business. Mm-hmm. That business is, you promised me you'd be with me until the very time, and I'm here all by myself and you left me. Mm-hmm. How do I, as a human, rectify that? Because that's all that I swallowed. That was all that I brought. I'm so holding on to that tight dream that I can't let it go. And so I believe that's a piece of what unfinished business would look like. Unfinished business can be revenge. I mean, it can be hate, it can be pain and suffering, it can be hopelessness and lost dreams. I mean, there's a plethora of things that can be unfinished, but I feel many people come to me when they have what I call unfinished. And until we tend to the unfinished business, we can't ever begin to currently or that heavy grief that happens, which is soul loss.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because I think people can also relate to that even when someone who is still alive, they're grieving the loss of their relationship, they're grieving the loss of the breakup of a situation or a divorce or something along that lines. And so people are constantly not always understanding themselves when it comes to still suffering from grief. And it can be years. It can be a long time that people suffer from this, or they bury it very deeply within themselves. And then all of a sudden it gets reawakened or reopened. And when something triggers it in some way, what are your thoughts about that, about burying this so deeply and then having something like this triggered and reopened? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it can happen if something triggers and bursts open, because then it's able to heal, right? You have to focus on it. But then it also can be, you know, as a human, because you're carrying around like what I call these open soul wounds that are deep inside yourself, and you know, you just keep putting a band-aid over and putting a band-aid over it, or you don't believe in yourself. Like, say you were with an abusive partner who not maybe you but mentally abused you, they told you you're stupid all the time or whatever, you continue to carry around, you drag that around behind you, or like luggage. And then when somebody does tell you you're great and beautiful, you can't even accept that. You know, you say, I have this oil that I make. It's called Let Love Live. Because so many of us get damaged from the relationships that we have, that we create this such a big, thick wall or that we won't ever allow ourselves to even connect and love again at that level. We thought we were really loving. It creates so many trust issues and boundary problems. And I mean that it really is a bad thing for us as humans. It can literally change your trajectory of your life, right? Because now maybe you will avoid things that your spirit putting you in front of to go do, but you avoid it because you've got layers and layers of this pain and around you that you won't allow yourself to be there. So it can be very traumatizing, and it can happen at any time, right? Somebody, one person, have that vibrational pattern of themselves that resonates something that, you know, you just, your mind's eye is really not seeing.
Yeah, I feel like I need to pay you after this session, because good counseling session here, Micah, I'll tell you right now. And I think a lot of people would probably feel the same way, because, you know, a lot of people who have these relationships, whether they are, even if the person has passed away, you can still have, I don't want to use the word baggage, but you can have unresolved feelings and emotions and things of even the past relationship that you had with them, and for some reason you still can't come to terms. A lot of times people don't understand that sometimes things just don't stop at the point that it appears things stop. Sometimes this stuff can have a greater effect. And in other people, some of them that are just very good at not letting anything bother them or faze them or whatever, for some reason, it makes some of the people that are more emotional more angry, because you can't believe that they don't sense the emotion or anything that you're going through. I don't know. It's just, it's very, very interesting, especially when it comes to soul loss and all that. I was going to find this one thing here about... So you have many different aspects. I'm going to read off to you a couple different aspects. This involves her slide that was on soul loss, and also this is interesting. Okay, so memories and parts of your life have been blocked out. Memories or parts of your life have been blocked out. Is that, Micah, a form of grief and trauma, where you're putting that bubble around those memories that you have decided to just block out, and that somehow can fester within a person and, like you say, change the trajectory or even their personality? What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that I even experienced it for myself, right? I mean, from losing my mother, blocking those things out, you know, of the loss, that parental person in my life from there on out. But when we take and have those memories that are traumatic or so deep within ourselves, sometimes it's easier just not to feel them or even experience them again, because we don't want to experience it again, not mentally, not emotionally. It's part of our PTSD that even helps shield us and from that happening again, right? I mean, so that way we don't accidentally encounter the same situation. It taught us a deep lesson that we need to make sure that it brings into that, you know, fight or flight type of part.
Right. No, right. That's right. Parts of yourself feel missing or broken. Yeah, I would say that most people, especially when they have, whether it be a loss through death or a loss in life of someone that they felt close to, and people in relationships especially can relate to this, even in divorce. You've been married a long time, you have a divorce, there is a piece of you that seems to go along with all that energy and that of what you've given or what you feel you've given that person, but maybe you haven't experienced enough back. what would you suggest? I don't know if there's anything to suggest people do when they find themselves in this situation where they recognize that a part of their soul might have gone. They want to fill that void or put a plug in that pain. Is there anything people that can do to help them recover from those situations? What are your thoughts on that?
If you're at a point where you think you have soul loss, you should seek out some type of healer that can be able to help you do that. It just depends on what you really believe in, whether you're religious and you need to go to your preacher, or whether you're a spiritual person and you want to find somebody that kind of gives you that connection and closure. Depending on to how much of your soul did you really give away? I mean, did you just give a little string away, or did you give a good chunk of yourself away? Or had you already given chunks of yourself away to other traumatic situations, and now you're really just a big bunch of mess of puzzle pieces that need to be put together?
Yeah.
But the biggest thing I like to tell people is that, first off, forgive yourself, right? Forgive. Most of us beat ourselves up so darn bad that we not only have the wound, but do we keep picking at it and rubbing salt in it, or talking bad about our own selves and our negative tapes that keep this thing alive, right? So for me, it's forgive yourself. If you could allow yourself to be forgiven, then that will help a lot. And I mean, truly forgive yourself. Okay, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't what you wanted it to be. You wished it would have been different. That's your human aspect of yourself. The spiritual aspect of yourself understands that it's okay that we have learned the lesson. It's not a mistake. It's a lesson that we've learned. All of us have lessons to learn. You have lessons. I have lessons. The viewers have lessons. And we all learn them at different times throughout this incarnation that we're in. And sometimes we don't learn them. That's why I believe in reincarnation. We may come back and need to learn that. I'm not the keeper of that, but nor should we worry about that. We should just trust that we're moving along the process as we need to move along the process. I just feel like that's one of the biggest things. The other thing is allow yourself to love again, right? Allow yourself to not only love others, but love yourself. Because if you can't love yourself, you have nothing to give to anyone else, right? So if I'm broken into a bunch of pieces and I come up to my next potential partner or significant person or business partner or friend, and I'm coming to him with this big blunk of bleeding everything, whoa, mm-hmm. How can they fall in love with that? Because if they fall in love with this, when you do become whole, they're going to be deluded as to the person that they fell for, right? Because wait, where'd that girl go that I met? You know what I mean? And so being able to do that. And then my last thing is to allow yourself to close that chapter. Okay. Chapter closed, door shut, lesson learned. Got it. Picking my stuff up and I'm moving on, right? How many people have you guys, or how many of you out there really have experienced that fact that I've got wronged. I got the message. I realize, and I can blame and shame and guilt whoever, but I got to be okay with what I did and what I said. And then I'm going to pick my bags up and I'm going to move on. I'm closing that chapter. I'm making it a final. And then I'm going to write down all the lessons I've learned, and I'm going to reflect on those when my next encounters come along, right? So okay. I just believe doing those three big things alone, cognitively, your heart, bringing your heart into it and your gut into it, and trusting you're making the right decision for you, then that will help a lot of things right there.
Yeah, I think that life is a lot about learning about lessons as we go along, or at least for each of us individually, right? Because we're all mm-hmm. not learning the same lessons. We all have different lessons that we seem to be learning as we go along, or experiences that we go through where we are trying to understand how that came to be or whatever, and then why it seems to be in some cases a very long period of time, all of a sudden it gets reopened again, and then you either remember why it something like this was not good enough for you to begin with, and then you can finally close that chapter. There are some people though that do have chapters that go on for an awfully long time, or people won't allow the chapter to close when someone's trying to close it. You know, those are very difficult situations, especially when you're even not together, where you can run into that. And of course, you have something here about people can feel mentally and physically fatigued, even though for no medical reason. And I think people don't recognize that enough, that they don't, you know, you can't self-analyze every second of your day. But sometimes if you just sit down and give yourself a moment to you know, even ask yourself, why am I feeling this way? Am I getting sick, or what? You know, what's sucking the life out of me, or what's happening here? What do you think about that? People don't seem to recognize because we're so busy, right?
Right.
And we don't pay attention.
Right. And we tend to keep ourselves busy when we're uncomfortable or distracted. You know, we don't want to focus on the problem. We want to focus on not feeling the problem. We want to be numb to it when it's that painful. And it's bringing up things over and over and over. We drink it away. We drug it away. We work too much. We work out too much. I mean, we take things sometimes in excess, or we shut down so much that we become so introverted, we don't even have a life outside of maybe our phone or the TV or anything. So, I mean, for me, kind of what you're talking about is what I call spiritual exhaustion. There's a flip side to all of it. Let's look at that kind of thing, the being spiritually exhausted. And one of the things I talked about in that discussion was a little bit about world weariness. I feel this is a good spot to bring that in, because I think many of us don't understand how much COVID really affected us. Yeah. We lost people, but outside of that, the ones that didn't lose anybody, they might just be exhausted from, even though if you didn't do anything, you stayed home the whole entire time and you only had to do nothing but look and focus on yourself, you could still be having the effects of what I call these rippling effects of being what you call spiritually exhausted. Spiritual exhaustion looks like the same thing that depression might look like. I was somebody that would go out all the time before COVID hit. COVID hit, whoa, crud, I'm all tucked in. And now, even though I'm still an extroverted person, I find myself not wanting to go out and do anything. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at myself thinking, what the heck is wrong with me that I don't want to go out and be social? And I found that world weariness is a true thing, where we're taking in so much of hearing all the things that are going on. I mean, we've got wars, we've got crime, we've got homelessness, we've got all these different things that are being piped into us through media, through people talking in the, you know, the lunchrooms and all that kind of stuff. And so it really does weigh down on us. We might not consciously think about that, and our heart will feel heavy over it, and you're just exhausted over it. And that's world weariness, which leads into more of a spiritual exhaustion.
No, that's very interesting. And I agree with you. I don't think people have had really a moment to really understand what has happened to each of us as we have had to, think about it for a moment. One moment we're doing our thing, and the next moment they're telling us, shut. I remember the day they shut the entire city down. You know, everything went into major shutdown. You could hear a pin drop outside. Stay in your homes. Don't come out of those homes. You know, if you have to come out, you better be wearing 5 masks on you. And I had COVID for 8 months, and I nearly died of it twice. So I understand how bad it was, because somehow it hit me really badly, but I didn't have to worry about going to a job, and many people were learning how to do their jobs at home. And then all of a sudden now they kind of like being at home, but no, you got to go back into the office. And so you've got these constant tugs and pulls, and think about the airlines. Oh my God, get your mask on. Don't you dare take that off during flight. And then all of the trouble that caused, and people having fights on the airplanes and all that. these are things that people don't realize or recognize that, and maybe someone might just say, well, that's just ongoing change. Yeah, but it's not just ongoing change. It's ongoing drastic change and nothing gradual about what we had to experience. So I agree. And the whole world was part of this. It wasn't just parts of the world. It was the entire world. And if you believe in a collective consciousness to some degree, or at least partial of consciousness to some degree, I do sense, and I don't know if you do, but I do, sometimes I can feel when something is about to rear up or something unsettling is going to happen or whatever. I can actually feel that, you know, a miserable day versus a happy day. So, yeah, I agree with you on that, especially when it comes also to when we talk about here are some similar words or that you had for world weariness, being bored. That's very disenchanted, disillusioned. I feel like that. I'm like that every day anyway. But anyway, skeptical, pessimistic, jaded, negative. Yeah, all of these things lead to that social and soul exhaustion. So what would you suggest people do to try to break themselves if they think that they've been thrown into soul exhaustion or any kind of exhaustion? What do you suggest people do to try to get back on track?
What I always recommend is, and what I did was come up with a list of what to do for myself daily, right? A self checklist. You can get on the internet. Google is amazing. Drive. You can find a million different checks and you can check stuff that feels good to you. You know, whether that is getting back into a routine, right? I mean, so for a long time, we were working from home. You were putting on one shirt, and you've seen all the memes where the people are standing up and they have no pants on, and, you know, just getting into a routine or a rhythm of what you feel is normal. Mm-hmm. Allowing yourself to know old you is no longer the norm. The new you is who you are, embracing that new you and going with it, like new Mishaela or my silver moon to be. You know, what is it? This is a new chapter in our lives. And what am I going to change about myself to improve outlook and why I'm feeling depressed and that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. The other thing is, it's really bothering you a lot. It's some therapy. Look, therapy is not a bad thing. You know, mental health shun. If you see a therapist, they're not, oh man, you're going to need this much medication and you got this big title of cloud weighing over your head. Sometimes we just need some circle of people to pop our problems on and say, oh, I'm good with it. You keep it, do what you need to do with it, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. Definitely making a checklist of things. I often tell people to engage in positive self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of always putting ourselves down. I think that's very important. Oh. If you're using and you've increased your alcohol intake, you were beforehand, that's definitely something you need to seek out some help for, right? We need to get into some recovery, recognize that we have with that. I know there was a lot of that kind of stuff. The other things were is that couples were put together.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why some relationships work well is because I go off to work, you go do your thing, and then we come back, we got something to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have all day with our kids and all that kind of stuff. And so having, again, creating that separateness within your own relationship or whatever relationship, have harmony, that's a very important thing to focus on. Because COVID brought us together and not everybody needed, that's not why the relationship was working. And so figuring out how to, you know, create something good between you and your partner.
Yeah, I agree with you on all of those accounts. I agree. And of course, take care of yourselves, drink water, drink teas, drink good, healthy things for you. Don't drink bad things for you, you know, change the way you look at things. I know for myself, I set a goal at the beginning of the year and I announced it on Facebook to those that follow me. And I said, this is what I want to accomplish this year. Now that might help me with the direction of being focused and stuff like that, but it also exhausts me because then I feel like I have to own it. But one of my checkpoints was to exercise more and to essentially lose a little bit of weight so I can feel better about myself. And I have, by the way, and I have lost weight, and I do exercise nearly daily and all that. And it does make a world of difference. So think about changing something in your life that you think might bring more. You know, some people I see a big push now for people to go and wrap their arms around trees. Well, just be careful what you're wrapping yourself around, but you never know what's on the tree. But the thing is, if it makes you feel better, then go hug a tree or something, you know? So that I find is very interesting. So one of the things too is, when we talk a little bit about spirit and stuff like that, you are a psychic medium, and everything. Where your gift comes from? How did you I mean, I know you recognized early on that things were coming to you, but when did you finally start honing into that aspect to really open up so that way you knew that you were actually hitting the mark with people and their issues and their loved ones?
I'd say probably right around, if I was looking at the time frame, like in the end of the 90s is when I really started to that was my biggest awakening, where I really allowed myself to become who I am. I started working in metaphysical shops, and I mean, you saw a huge cultural change in where before you had never found a book about witchcraft, right, in Borders or any of those places. And during that time frame, you started to see these books get on bookshelves in regular mainstream book places. So I felt like the world was really awakening, or at least America was awakening, and in my little world, and I felt comfortable to be able to bring my crystals out to people and put them on the table and say, pick one of these crystals and I can kind of tell you what, you know, your soul's wanting to say. I felt confident enough in myself that I could take the skepticism, that I could take the disbelievers, and let them understand that that's their thing and it wasn't necessarily my thing. Everybody didn't have to believe and want to praise everything I was doing. And so I think once I got to that point, I really felt very comfortable and just to have only kept moving on from there, really. And I've been lucky because the world's moved on with me, you know what I mean? As we have moved through 2012, another big awakening, COVID brought another awakening. And so I just, you know, for me, it just, the gods, my spirits, my guides keep saying, this is what you're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. And that brings up another question, of course. So the question that most people, now I have talked with a number of psychic mediums and they all seem to have a different way of receiving their messages. And so some people receive a message through colors for some reason. Some people receive messages through scenes that they see happening, and they interpret things differently based on the scene that they see, which is also very interesting. How do you receive your messages? I know that for a period of time, as me being a clairaudient, and it hasn't been as much as it was lately, and I'm not really sure what the answer, the reason why is that, because for a while there, it was really rampant, but I could hear not even always female or male voices, but I could hear directional voices come to me in, you know, in my mind or my ear as if something was talking in my right or left ear. How do they come to you? Because if you're bringing these messages to people, are you seeing things? Are you hearing things? Is it both? What's happening with you?
I sense it. So I kind of feel it, and it originates from like the middle of my shoulder blades is where I feel like, I don't know, maybe like a tingling or something like that, which then resonates into thoughts and words. And I've just learned to trust that those thoughts and words were what that person needed to hear. And then the other thing for me is, like I said, I really can fixed energies. Now, how that relates to connecting things, but if I have somebody that comes around near me and I all of a sudden start tasting this energy around me, I feel like that's when the soul begins talking to me. It's telling me what's going on with the person. And then again, for me, it's about sense, nose, taste, and definitely that energy from the back of my spirit into my mind.
Interesting. That's interesting.
I really just learned.
And then have you ever seen, that you know of, have you ever seen either a full-bodied apparition come to you, or do you see them visually in your mind? Because when people are trying to express a message to someone or whatever, what do you see there?
I don't, I've never really seen a full body apparition myself personally. I take it back. When we were kids and we lived in Texas, there was a strange event that happened in a restaurant that we ran for my dad. And we had this apparition come in the back door and walk down the hallway. It opened the freezer door and it turned around like it got something and it walked out and the door went shut. And it was like this bright, light, bluish kind of, but it had no body shape. It was kind of like just like a lighted energy. Mm-hmm. And not only did I see it, but my brothers and sisters saw it too. So for me, that's probably the closest thing is an apparition or a ghost mm-hmm. kind of thing. But we were just like the whole time. So for me, I really have not seen apparitions. I feel like I feel them. Like I feel like they come to me and want to sit with me or sit on me or sit really close to me. Like, so I've had an experience also in the past where I've been out hunting, ghost hunting with our team. Yeah. And there was a person who came, he wanted to cross over. And so he came through me, like sat right in me and used my vessel as a launching point to be able to speak to the, we had a person that was a pastor on our team, and he wanted to speak to the pastor to be absolved before he went. And so that was an amazing experience and a whole nother story, you know, from there. But those are the only experiences that I've actually had, like physical experiences.
Interesting. But do you find that because your, I call it, our beams are a little bit brighter than maybe some that don't recognize they have a beam, that they do actually come around you? How do you do I presume you've been in cemeteries, and how do you do when you walk in cemeteries? Do you have all of a sudden a lot of attention? Now, some people say that once someone passes away and they're buried in a cemetery or a graveyard, that the soul doesn't stay with their body there. Maybe 1% might hang around or whatever. I don't know. What are your thoughts about cemeteries and souls that come to people similar to us that may want to attempt contact? What are your thoughts?
For me, cemeteries, when I go there, I mean, I don't feel a whole lot from cemeteries when I go to them, to be honest. I mean, every once in a while, I might come around, whether that is somebody maybe fresh, but I've never really dealt with anybody from long time past coming up and saying anything to me in, but I don't go to places not protected. I mean, yeah. Like, because I know I have this ability to take in energy. I have my own things that I've created for myself that I put on, whether it be talismans or oils or lathers or whatever, that I create a filter and a shield on myself. So I don't pick up those energies, right? If I'm a symbiotic psychic vampire, I need to be very careful about my own personal health, that I don't take in a bunch of stuff I shouldn't be taking in mm-hmm. on a rightly time frame where I can take good care of my own health. Mm-hmm. So, and that's, like I said, a whole nother topic of its own, but I really don't feel a whole lot unless I go in and want to create that, then I would create that ability for myself.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I know I'm a sponge when it comes to sensing and feeling I'm a very sensitive empath. I mean, I could feel things that sometimes I get very upset with myself because I don't want to have to feel everything all the time. And I know you could probably try to block yourself from that a little bit, but there are times though when I'm more activated, and there are times when I'm less activated, or I have just a dull period and nothing's happening at all, which, you know, I can't say any one of those stages I prefer more. Sometimes it's very interesting to see what I can predict and know that I'm going to be right at it. And sometimes it's a little scary, you know, too, because it's like, well, what else is going to happen here? So it is kind of interesting. So now that you've come this journey and you've made it this far, obviously, and you've learned all of these different things, what would you like to share as it looks to be like we're moving into a wrap up? What would you like to share with people about some of the things that you've learned from even being a young chap all the way to now, and with people, with grief, with anything? What would you say are some of your takeaways?
I think a big takeaway is that if I had a dollar for every time somebody came to me and said, "You're going to think I'm crazy," I'd be super rich.
Yeah, I know.
But I just want people to realize that you're not crazy. We're in a time of great change, and we're thought about experiencing before. Allow yourself to be open to all the possibilities. You don't have to accept it. You don't have to disagree with it. You could just be with it. Just know it. You can get to know it as much as you need to and as much as you don't need to, because no matter what you really need, I believe that your spirit will bring it right back in front of your face time and time and time again until you finally get out of it what you really need. I think as humans, we put too many labels and time frames and expectations and all this cognitive thinking on the things that we think we should be doing, instead of just allowing ourselves just to be, right? And just to be okay with it's just being, right? And I think that's the biggest challenge. And if you find something that interests you, Read about it until you get distracted into maybe 10,000 other things of it. Mm-hmm. And trust your gut. Your gut is made to never lead you astray. It will not lead you astray. When and your heart is not really sure about anything, your gut will always tell you the truth. That's what I believe. And so you to do and follow that, because it'll lead you in the direction of the path work that you need to be in.
Yeah, I think many of us ignore our gut intuition because sometimes we don't want to believe what our gut's telling us. And then all of a sudden when our gut's right, we kick ourselves because it's like, you know, I thought about that, but I just didn't want to believe it. You know, you hear people say that all the time. So if people want to get a hold of you or read more about some of the things that you have done and anything, what would you like to provide to our listeners as well as our viewers here on how they can either contact you or read more about you?
So there's a few ways you can find my own Silver Moon Medicine. And of course, no, medicine is spelled different. It's MEDICYN because it wasn't something that is socially acceptable at the time I created it. And it's .com. You'll find tab if you're in the Pacific Northwest, places that I go to, or you can follow their Silver Moon Medicine on Facebook. And the other place you can read information about is on my blog. So I'm longer, and it's Silver Moon Medicine blog, and you can find quite a few things on there. So again, at the very be able to write me. Conversation is always free. I can't guarantee to you I'll get to you right the second that you write me, but I will do my best to be able to follow up with any questions you have or any of that kind of stuff. So
we're good.
And I'm talking to anybody that wants to get a hold of me.
And I'm going to have all of this information that she's provided, because again, little choppy here, so no worries. All of this will be at the show notes at the end of the show, and you'll be able to contact her or read about things that she's writing about, or even go to conferences in the future that she may have listed there that she's going to be attending as a speaker or a workshop individual presenter. So thank you so much for being on the show today.